All right, guys. Welcome once again to your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I am Brad Howard, and I've got John on the phone once again. And today we're going to cover a couple of different things. But first of all, hopefully I'm going to apologize really quickly. Hopefully I don't sound like T-Boz from TLC and just all raspy and everything. My voice is still a little bit scratchy from all the chatting and networking we did up in New York. But John, apparently we're still getting a lot of questions on the whole phenomenon of being able to build muscle and lose fat at the same time. And we were talking about this a little bit earlier and how we wanted to really flesh this out. But it really seems like it depends on how you define all of this stuff.
Yeah, the problem, I think, is the definition of what muscle is and what muscle building is. So obviously the traditional thought is you need to bulk to some degree to build muscle, and then to lose fat, you do a cut, I guess, for lack of a better word. So a cut down and a bulk up. And that thinking isn't wrong if you imagine that a muscle is the size of a muscle is pretty transient. So the fullness of the muscle, how loaded it is with glycogen and water, how hydrated it is, how kind of puffed up and bloated it looks, does have to do with how much you've been eating and how much you've been training. And, you know, if you exhaustively train a muscle, you can actually get it to load more glycogen. And when your muscles store glycogen, it also has to store even more water than glycogen per like unit mass, so it's going to look bigger. And when you're eating a lot, it's going to look bigger. Also, when you're eating a lot and maybe you've got just a small layer of fat on you, that all adds to how big everything looks. So if if you've seen a natural guy diet down, they kind of look really, I don't want to say skinny, but they look thin when they're dieted down. And not only is the no fat around the muscle, but the muscle itself might not be quite as hydrated as you're used to seeing. So you get a double effect there of less fat around the muscle, so the entire, you know, arm or leg or whatever you're looking at just looks a bit smaller because of that. And then the muscle itself is less hydrated or bloated, so that also makes it look a bit smaller. So when you look at it from that standpoint, you could, I suppose you could theorize, or it makes sense to assume that bulking has something to do with building muscle. But it's not building muscle as much as it would be taking up more space. So like, do you want to fit into an extra large shirt or a large shirt sort of thing, regardless of what it is that's filling the shirt? So is it, you know, partly muscle bloat with glycogen? Is it partly a little bit extra layer of fat, a little bit of water retention outside the cells? All those things put together make you look a lot bigger as a guy and make you weigh more on the scale.
Right.
But take your shirt off and you're like, oh, you're kind of smooth. There's not a whole lot of definition there. Yeah, your arm is big, but it's smooth. So there really is a trade-off. I think the root of all of this is the false assumption that you can be bigger than that you can be bigger and more ripped than your body will allow, which again comes from looking at ads of athletes who use drugs who allow that to happen. Now, you and I could be as big and ripped as we want if we have enough drugs in us. So we can literally decide, I want a 20-inch arm and I want it ripped. But if you're going to do it clean, now you have to deal with what the genetics of a human body can actually do without drugs. And that probably means something more like a 16-inch arm ripped.
Right.
And you just can't have it both ways. So, but a lot of guys think they can. And like I said, it just comes back to seeing the drug-induced look and not really knowing where the drug versus clean line is and not realizing that that line's probably a lot lower than you think. And you probably just don't know enough people who are on to have a good gauge of what is doable and what isn't. And I don't know if ironic or funny is the word, but if you ask any guy who's on drugs, they'll already know. They kind of already know where that line is because they've been through it.
Right. Yeah, it's really interesting, especially now that it seems like more and more people are getting busted and being indicted. I mean, heck, Roger Clemens just got indicted and he's going down, it seems like, pretty hard for lying. And you know, there's some other implications with some of the cycling guys and stuff like that, and they're not even that big. So I guess the mud is really getting kind of murky here as far as who's on it, who's not. It's almost like you have to suspect it almost if there's money involved that people are on. And that's kind of a really broad, but I want to say shitty way to look at it, but it almost has to be that way, don't you think?
To keep your own sanity and your own expectations realistic, and to not sort of feel frustrated year after year because you're not looking like the cover model on Men's Health. Yeah. I've told everyone to watch that movie Bigger, Stronger, Faster, where Christian Boving just comes right out and says, what are you guys kidding me? Like, I've been using drugs since I was 16. And, we've got somebody, I appreciated that somebody put the link to his interview up in our forum, and he's not the bulky goon bodybuilder on Flex Magazine. He's the cover model, like he's the I don't want to say smaller, but the more fitness looking model. And he's been on drugs since he was a teenager. So the view of what a natural body looks like is so skewed. I don't even think most people have even seen one in a magazine, like an actual true natural body. Like a ripped true natural bodybuilder. I'll bet you most guys have never actually even seen one. They've only ever been exposed to some kind of drug induced state. So it's no one's gonna tell. I wish I had pictures when I was on because I could show you what it looks like. Compared to what I look now, but it's just most people aren't gonna tell. Like Roger Clemens is now being indicted and he still won't admit it. Like everyone else said, come on, he used the same time I did, and he's the only person who won't admit. Like, he'll probably try to tell. I was actually listening to a radio show where they were speculating that he believes the lie so much that it won't be perjury because he doesn't believe he did anything wrong because he believes the lie so much.
Right.
Now that's assuming he actually, everyone else was telling the truth and he's the one lying. But, he just seems like the most untrustworthy person in the country right now, so. And there's just so many of them. And then, it's not like using drugs makes you huge without training. So you could use them for recovery and not really do a heavy muscle building style of workout. And you won't look abnormally huge. You won't look like a bodybuilder if you don't train like one. So even though the point is you can be on drugs and train at all different intensities and have all different looks, which makes it even harder to figure out who's clean and who's not.
Yeah, especially when we're starting to get into a lot of the anti-aging stuff and the hormone replacements is starting to pick up even more and more steam. And I mean, it gets interesting. That's for sure. Even the line, I've always said this, where's the line of performance enhancing? I mean, where does it start and where does it stop?
Like Tiger Woods getting his eyes done, isn't that performance enhancing?
Yeah, I would consider that. I mean,
not even that. You shouldn't even be allowed to wear glasses because that's enhancing. And personally, how I am. If I go ahead, take drugs. I'm passing no moral judgment. I've used them. They served my purpose at the time. I just don't see why it's anyone else's opinion to tell you what to do with your own body, but the problem is when people have already made the choice that they'd rather not use them, but are looking to role models that are using them, and then body image, like they have an image of a body they want that is, but they don't realize that that image can only be attained with drugs, and then they get caught up wasting money on all these promises that for supplements and programs and just foods and eating patterns that are supposed to deliver the drug-induced look that's impossible to get to. So
yeah, it's interesting. Let's bring it back really quick to this build muscle and lose fat thing, because even all this ties in. I've got a buddy that I was at the gym yesterday. It's a guy I talk about all the time. I mean, he's on and he's trying to get in contest shape or whatever. And it's really funny because he's about once a month as he's dialing down, he carves back up just so his coach can see where he's at. Right.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And yesterday was a carb up, and so he was eating his yams and stuff like that. And it was just funny because, we kind of go back to the pilons, 8 pounds in one workout thing. But technically, this guy is going to gain 10 pounds in one day.
Sure.
Because he's been low carbon and working his way down and etching his way down, this whole time. And the next thing he's, he's 10 pounds heavier. And he said so. I mean, we talked about it. It's like, damn, I was like, man, because he's significantly bigger than I am. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's got a lot more room to hold water. And I was like, well, how much do you think that's going to gain? 15 pounds or something? He said, probably 8 to 10. And I was like, man, and this was, he was talking about, 1 to 2 gallons of water plus, you know, the carbs and everything like that. And
yep.
You start, when you start looking at this stuff, when as the actual water is so transient, and the, like the whole build muscle and lose fat thing, probably you.
Like it's more like I would say more like fill muscle,
right?
Not build it, but fill it. You got to fill it with glycogen and water, and steroids also help it absorb even more than it could without.
So if I was going to try to really nail down what people want, or the better question to ask, it would probably be, can you gain strength and lose fat at the same time?
I guess it's.
If there was one that was like you could really measure, I guess you could say, that would be the one. Because like we talked about earlier, I mean, if you're dieting, chances are your carb levels are going to be down a little bit. Your overall food level is going to be down. That means your water level and glycogen levels are going to be down a little bit. That means the muscle's not going to be as full just because of the lack of food. So technically, you've lost muscle, you know, quote unquote. But realistically, the building blocks, the proteins and stuff like you've talked about in the past, they haven't gone anywhere.
They're just less full.
Yeah, they're just less full.
Yeah, that's the problem. The problem is the conceptualization of what a muscle is. It's not a brick. It's a balloon. I know I always say that all the time. But it's really transient. Like, you know, if you – it's kind of like the day after drinking a lot, the next day you wake up, some people feel very, like, drawn and – flat because they're dehydrated just from if they had a lot of drink the night before. Some people look really ripped the next morning because of that.
Sure.
And I'm trying to give examples of how transient the look of your body is. It's literally moment to moment, like day to day, hour to hour. So is the look of your muscles. And drugs keep that muscle bloated no matter what you're doing. And competitors know this. Towards the right before a show, they manipulate their water to have a look. Like I said, there was a guy, a competitor that's at my gym who, the last time he dieted down, he dropped like 16 or 18 pounds of water in the last 2 days before the show. That's a lot of water.
Yeah,
so,
it is.
And that changes the way you look like a lot. So, and they know that. And he knows that that's not like he's not losing muscle and he's not losing fat. He just knows that a bunch of water that he's holding's got to go for that really kind of chiseled look. And, you know, it's like, if anything, those people have a much clearer vision of what they're doing and what their body actually sort of looks like from the inside out. Like, they kind of know what makes up a muscle. They kind of know what makes up their fat. And they also know, oh, yeah, and there's a layer of water here that's got to go. So
that's one of the things that just kind of – I guess I'm fortunate. And maybe I could suggest other guys – you know, just to kind of get a better picture of what's really going on is, you know, if you know contest bodybuilders, whether on drugs or not, you know, just kind of talk to them and ask them what they're doing and just watch how meticulous things are. It's really crazy how dialed in they're trying to get with all of this stuff. And it's all around water.
Oh, the craziest thing is seeing the water deplete happen.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, God, yeah. The coolest thing is when you see the guy go from 48 hours before the show to the day of the show and watch how much different it is. It's pretty nuts.
Yeah. Well, think about it. Think about this. I mean, if a guy's dropping 16 to 18 pounds of water, that's 2 gallons of water that's coming off his body.
Yeah. It's not fat. It's just water.
Yeah. Think about that. You're holding two big jugs of water in your hand, and that's how much this guy's shedding in, you know, 48 hours. I mean, that just blows my mind.
And then now, again, let's qualify this. Any competitors I'm talking about are using steroids too.
And diuretics.
And diuretics. So even if a clean guy uses diuretics, he just won't be as big looking afterwards. Like, he'll still look like a clean guy can get that really, really chiseled look. He just won't have muscle underneath, just won't be as big and as round and as full as a guy who's on.
Sure.
Part of the effect of the drugs is to keep the muscle hydrated, even though they're doing a water deplete.
Yeah. But let's talk about this, because we touched on a little bit about the drugs and supplementation and things like that a little bit. But, you know, we talked about earlier about the, you know, kind of some of the FTC laws and labeling and how a lot of the things that you see in magazines, I mean, they're very strict on what they can and can't say. And now we're getting to the point where there's a lot of, you know, talk about jurisdictions on what happens online. And, you know, you've got, you know, renegade publishers or whatever, the things that are kind of the Wild West, where you've got, it's basically, you've got a lot of claims that are basically being overseen by the FTC and have to be overseen, but then you've got a whole other set of claims that aren't being overseen by the FTC as of yet. And, you know, it was like you were saying, if one guy that's online all of a sudden says that he's discovered this crazy secret, and, you know, but nobody else can really, the other guys can say that, you know, it's, you can really think that, because this guy can get away with a lot more than these other guys, namely because they're bigger.
Right, so let's walk through it. So yeah. Basically, the Federal Trade Commission is what we're talking about, regulates what you can say in print advertising and on TV and things like that. The FDA, at least for supplements, regulates what you can say on your label itself. And then, again, speaking – so like for food or supplements or anything like that, the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, is in control of that. And then they also consider a website an extension of a label. So whatever you say on the label of a supplement, it has to adhere to FDA laws, but so does your website. And then print advertising and television advertising and those sort of things, the FTC is in charge of what you kind of say and don't say there. So those are the two regulatory bodies for supplements and food. And then what you can say on a label is pretty strict, and then what you can say in an ad changes a bit. But the ad still needs to be clear that it's an ad. So in a magazine, somehow people have to realize they're not reading an article and that they're reading an ad. And there's certain things you can and can't say. There's certain product placement positions where, like, a product has to appear and things like that. So in all of these places, there's some regulation to what you can and can't say. And right down to the FTC even has guidelines on weight loss, like the amount of weight loss you're even allowed to say at all. And it's around 2 pounds a week is the maximum they'll allow you to say in advertising. So if you, as a customer, are being exposed to FTC-regulated claims, you're not normally ever going to see anyone say anything beyond 2 pounds of weight loss is possible in a week. So because any advertiser is bound by the FTC to only say that. And so these are in places like on TV and in print, where you're buying pages in a magazine and you're kind of have to comply because the magazine needs you to comply. But online, we can throw a website up and say lose 20 pounds this week. And what we're doing is, oh, but we found the secret to how to lose that much this week, you know, in 1 week. And, you know, you won't be exposed to that kind of claim anywhere else because everyone else is adhering to the FTC, like in print magazines when you go to a magazine rack. But then when you go online, you know, there's no rules. We can put up a website in 5 minutes and have that up. So the FTC is not monitoring us. Nobody's monitoring us. You could see how people are like, wow, maybe does this guy really, this is the only guy saying it. Maybe he really does know. And that's only because everyone else would love to say it, but they're going to get in trouble if they say it. So it's the part of the good and bad thing of the internet is everyone can have a voice, but some of those voices are sort of not really all that truthful. I'm not saying that the FTC's guidelines are 100% accurate. They're a bit conservative too. I mean, I think their 2 pound claim comes from what's realistic for fat loss, but we know that people who have a fair bit of weight to lose will routinely lose more than 2 pounds a week just by the a reduction in water retention with the fat. So, I mean, lots of people are losing 3, 4, or 5 pounds a week at the beginning when they have lots to lose. And that's not unrealistic. I mean, that happens over and over again. It's just the FTC's, the way they put their regulation together seems a bit like they overlook the idea that, wow, people really do have that much water to get rid of too. So it is what it is for now, and that's how people have to comply. But the internet, you don't necessarily need to comply because it's impossible to regulate it. Like right now, this call, we're in two different countries on this call. So if we say something on this call and use it for advertising, which country even regulates that? And it's being hosted in a cloud, which is everywhere. And then it's, you know, the website is, I mean, where is a website based? Like, I'm uploading to it, but you set the website up. So, you know, who,
Yeah, the website's somewhere else too. I mean, it's on a cloud. It could be pulled from a different server, a different cloud. I mean, the download stream is in a different cloud. I mean, then you've got your places where that aggregate the actual podcast feed, like iTunes and all these other places like that. I mean, you know, those guys are based in other places. So it starts to get really hairy as far as whose responsibility is to actually regulate a lot of this stuff. And so actually what's interesting, and we'll kind of, you know, touch on this just a bit because, you know, we've got some stuff that we may be telling you guys down the pipeline about how we're kind of leading the charge and people are looking up to us for this in the industry, which is really interesting. But what it really comes down to is a lot of the people that are hosting advertising that are having to actually do a lot of the regulating. And, you know, these guys don't really have an idea of what's true or not. I mean, they're just concerned about their users, you know, abandoning their websites and stuff like that because they're the ones hosting the ads for a lot of the products. So it's almost like right now it's a self-reporting type of environment. So, you know, it's really interesting, but it's kind of like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we could say that we know that one of the popular supplements online, Acai-Berry, one of the groups that's advertising, it's getting sued right now for false advertising.
Yeah.
And that, I'm sure if you've browsed around the internet at all, you've seen an Acai-Berry ad somewhere. I mean, we all know that Brad's picture's been stolen and used on one of their ads. So, and they're finally getting pinched for it, but it took a long time for them to, for any kind of action to come down. Cause I'm sure it's really hard to regulate it. Whose jurisdiction is that, you know?
And the only reason these guys are getting hosed is because it's the Acai-Berry and colon cleanser. They got some other stuff as well. But the only reason they're getting hosed right now is because they were dumb enough to incorporate in the United States.
Oh, if they had just done it in a different country, it probably wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. I mean, I think they're out in Phoenix. I mean, you can Google this. I mean, the FTC's got a press release out and all this stuff about it. I mean, these guys were doing a significant amount of business. And, you know, using fake blogs and all of this other stuff, or maybe they weren't using it, but people that their affiliates were actually using that type of stuff. And, you know, but it kind of started out where somebody like Google actually had to be the person to kind of self-regulate because their users were actually buying the product and it was bad and they had really bad business practices. So it started to flash back on Google. And so it kind of starts where they have to start leading the charge. That's kind of what we're talking about is it's really interesting about how all of this kind of comes around as far as how the ads and stuff. But I guess what we're going to, or what we're kind of coming into is that, you know, we understand, I guess at the bottom line is we understand why you're confused about things because there's just a lot of stuff out there that just doesn't make it all just kind of clashes. So you've got the regulated people saying one thing or making certain claims and trying to kind of jimmy around, you know, certain words. And trust me, I mean, everyone stretches the boundary of what they can do as far as a claim. I mean, even, I was looking at just basic stuff like cleaning supplies and things like that. Just kind of looking at it from what I know, and looking at the exact claim that they make. The exact claim that they make is very much implied. Like they say one thing, but you as a consumer, you take it and you really run with it, right? So, but they know that it's kind of seeded that way. So, and we'll probably just get off topic, but you know, whatever.
Yeah, well, no, but it's not off topic. That's happening everywhere, even within the regulated industries like advertising and print magazines or on television. Same thing. I mean, advertisers push the limit all the time. It's kind of like when you see one of those car commercials, and they talk about, you know, the great deal and the 5-star rating, and at the very, very, very end of the commercial, there's that huge paragraph of disclaimer that you can never read. Like, yeah. Come on. Like, that's the regulated part that where you actually think the customers are reading that. And basically, that last paragraph that's impossible to read probably discredits everything they said throughout the whole commercial.
Oh, and what's even better, I forget who did this, but there was a what will happen is that people in commercials will reference a certain body. Like, say, it'll be like not Motor Trend, but let's just say Motor Trend, right? Let's say a car company. Like, everybody knows Motor Trend. But there's another one that's actually an actual for-profit company that will get quoted. But people assume that it's the other company that's not for profit, that's the actual review board.
Oh, every single car has a 5-star review rating from some other from some other rating system. Yeah.
That's paid for.
Sure.
Like, you pay to get the rating, but you're assuming that
it's unbiased.
Right. It's really kind of sneaky if you really listen to who the actual rating is from. And this is everywhere. If you actually do some research on who is actually doing the rating, it sounds like somebody else that's unbiased. Like really, the implied thing is that it's so fast that it comes by that they're trying to make it sound like this other company, but they're not lying to you. You just, as a person, you're familiar with this other company, so you just naturally put two and two together in your mind that it's this other company. But realistically, it's the company that they paid to get the positive review from or whatever. And we're not saying just cars. I mean, this is all across the board.
Oh yeah, every industry has it where there's somebody's reviewing something and there's more interest behind the review.
Right.
So
just remember this, and this is really important, and John and I talk about this all the time and just kind of conceptualize it. And this is one of the things we'll probably talk about in self-psych warfare and that new module that's coming in Adonis 3.0. But no decision happens in a vacuum, like ever. And so you as a person, and people know this, so you don't sit there by yourself and in general look at something and decide whether you want it or not, whether it's a spouse or a car or whatever. You always look to someone somewhere, somehow, and ask them. Either you look online for a review or you ask your buddy, you're like, hey, what do you think about her? So you're always looking for some type of permission or feedback to be able to do what you want to do. And this is where a lot of the capitalization and what you don't know really kind of comes in to kind of bite you, because your decisions in that way can be guided, you know, because people know that it's not an absolute thing. Everything's relative. So it's, like I said, I'm not going to go really deep into that, but just remember that. And no decision happens in a vacuum. You know, there's always something. You know, if you walk into a bar or whatever, and you walk in with a group of, you know, really rambunctious frat boys, I mean, right then, right off the bat, everybody decides that you're a rambunctious frat boy too, right off the bat. So no matter who you are, just because you walked in with them. So again, it's the same thing.
All right.
So, did you want to touch back on anything else and kind of, you know, pull it back as far as the build muscle, lose fat, or even, you know, kind of the unfair advantage of the renegade publisher?
do we even give an answer on that? I guess for build muscle and lose fat,
I guess it depends on your perspective.
It depends on what you think building muscle is. That's the whole issue. If you think building muscle is just having a bigger measurement, but regardless of how lean it looks, then probably not, because by definition, the fat's going to be, if you're losing fat, you're going to be reducing your measurement, because there'll be less fat no matter what muscle you're trying to measure. And during the time that you are low calorie, odds are you're going to be holding less mass within the muscle, less water mass and glycogen mass in the muscle. So it'll tape probably a bit smaller. Transiently, but if you're in that state for a while and you're training, there's no reason why that shouldn't still stimulate the muscle to grow. But growth is up for interpretation. It's like, what do you mean by grow? Do you mean putting in the process of heightening protein synthesis, hopefully reducing some degradation, and over time, like, muscle growth is way slower. The concept of muscle growth is way slower than the concept of just cutting, like, the way you can reduce its volume by just cutting down on carbohydrates and calories and fat mass. So it's the process of growing, I guess, is still happening, even though it might look like it's smaller from being less hydrated.
I guess the conceptual question would be this, and if we were going to say, okay, let's say I start out right now and I've been training a little bit, and all of a sudden I'm at a certain place I am right now. Let's say I weigh 180 pounds. And then I decide that I want to cut down 10 pounds of body fat, right? So by the time I get down to let's say 170, just for shits and giggles, have I done enough work to lay down the potential? So when I, normalize back to eating the way I was roughly, glycogen's up, water's up, will my muscles be bigger and fuller after all that? That's probably the way to look at it.
Well, the impossible way, but the reason you can't measure this is because this is the problem by using body weights or even tape measurements. Tape measurements are better. I like them better, but body weights won't help you know this because there's a look you will have at a certain body weight given the amount of training you've been doing, but you can't go back and relive your life. So if you've been training for 10 years and you weigh 175 pounds at a certain body fat percentage, you won't know what that 175 pounds would have looked like if you weren't training for 10 years. All you know is what you look like right now. And it's not like you can go back and relive your life and then test it. So all you've got is where you're at and how lean you are and how much you've been training. So that's why most of this doesn't make any sense to even think about. It's all you have is how you look and how lean you are right now. And then if you want to be leaner, you got to get rid of some fat. And then whatever muscles are under there, you'll see them leaner. And then just continue training to build them. That's all you can do. And then when you're really lean, you can experiment with hydrating and messing around with what a bodybuilder would do before a show just to see what you can do to your look in over the course of a day or two. Right. You can do some glycogen loading. You can do a couple of whole body exhaustive exercises and glycogen load and see what it looks like. You can take a diuretic and see what happens a day later after doing a diuretic and see how lean you look. Like, you can mess around with your look then and see this is what it looks like when I'm diuretic down super lean. This is what it looks like when I do a glycogen load. But until you're really lean, none of that's really going to show through. Like, it's, yeah. If there's a layer of fat all over you, it won't matter. Like, none of that will, you won't see much of a change. All you'll, you might slightly fill a shirt a bit more or not, and that's about it. So it's all of this even only matters when you're really lean anyways. So, I think a lot of it's just impatience. Like, a lot of guys just don't realize they've got years to go until they've built up enough muscle.
I don't know if it's necessarily impatience. I mean, I'm sure that's part of it, but it's the whole, what if it is true? What if I am missing out? You know what I'm saying? I mean, if somebody told you, it happens to me all the time. I mean, if somebody, we go to network in New York and somebody says, hey man, here's a way I can help you. I can help you make more money. All the boots and stuff like that. And these guys are pitching you, but they say something and you're like, well, what if that is true? What if I am missing out on that? Should I look into it? And it really takes a kind of a mature kind of, maybe that's a bad word, but just an experienced, head on your shoulders for that type of stuff to be able to kind of step back and really weed through, what's most likely reality and what's most likely,
BS.
Yeah, exactly.
I agree with that. I mean, you're right. I guess that's why guys who've been around the block once with drugs kind of look back and go, yeah, whatever. So, cause they've already tried it every which way and they wouldn't get caught up doing that again. So,
yeah.
I hate to say it that way, but most people who haven't used drugs they get caught so easily in so many of these other things because they just really don't know the difference. They just don't realize they're asking for something they can't have.
Well, let's kind of back it down really quickly to why they should listen to what we're saying right now, okay? Number one, if it were possible to do all of this stuff without drugs, we would have already done it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, with your background, with Pilon's background, even with my background, being in the industry as long as I have, if it were possible, we would have already done it. We would already found it out. I mean, all the research that you guys have been through, you would have found it and we would be telling people. I mean, that's just fact. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, I mean, right? Why wouldn't we? Like,
exactly.
Why wouldn't we? Jeez.
And in qualifying that, because you didn't find that while you were doing all your research, you did do the drugs in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So you did go that route. So not only can we look at it and go, okay, well, you didn't find it. So then you said, all right, well, damn it. Let me try this because this is the next best thing. And then you were like, holy cow. Okay. Night and day. Not even possible. Nowhere close to being possible.
Right.
And so that's kind of what we're getting at right now is that we're not trying to, sometimes I feel like we're trying to like bring the hope down, but that's not what we're trying to do.
We're just trying to make it clear as what your expectations should be.
Right, exactly. We're not trying to say you can't get big because you can. It just mm-hmm. depends on what you think big is.
Exactly. And this is something me and Pilon struggle with. I think we have a conception of big in our head that's way bigger than most people's big.
Right.
Like if people look at my picture and think I'm big, I don't.
Right.
But I think I'm bigger than everybody in our community. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's pretty funny because as we're at this seminar and trade show and all this stuff and meeting all the different people and all three of us are walking around. We were significantly bigger than everybody.
Yeah, and I wouldn't think of it that way. I still have my lingering Adonis complex where I still think I need to be bigger. It's, you know, I have it in control now, but it's sort of always there. And then it's just, you know, how big do you think you can be? And then I always look back from what I thought big was and what I thought, you know, magazine model type look was. And then I was like, oh, okay, that's big. And then I figured out how you get that big. And then, you know, it just turns into a big cycle where people just aren't sure what's doable and what's not doable. And that's why you shouldn't really compare yourself to anybody else. You just work with what you got. Like, even if you and I are the same age and more or less the same somatotype, but we don't have the same training history, you shouldn't really expect to be my size. So there's just so many other variables that go into it. So you should really just go with what you got. And, you know, that's how we set things up anyways, is just to work off of where you're at right now. I don't know what else to say about that.
Well, you know what's the funny thing about it is that, okay, so all three of us were together this weekend and, you know, walking around and stuff like that. All of us do similar style workouts. All of us are roughly the same size, but shirt off, all of us look significantly different.
Mm-hmm.
And we all lift about the same.
Yeah, but our history's different, right? Like I got really into powerlifting for a long time that I'm sure neither of you guys did as much as I did.
Right.
And the way I did it. So it's, you know, and everyone, even though we can all have the same ratio, the way we've said this before, it still hangs on your body differently. Everyone has a distinct look. So it's, you're just kind of just the way your shoulders sit, the way your chest sit, the way it all just sort of hangs there. Everybody's got quite somewhat of their own unique look. So it's, I mean, you're still going to end up with a distinct look. And it doesn't, again, none of this even matters if you're carrying too much fat. I mean, there is no look when you're fat. So
yeah, here's the funny thing about it. Okay, so everybody wants to be unique, and they want to try to create their own program and stuff like that. But guess what? If you use our program, and this isn't a pitch, it's just the fact of the matter. You can see all the people that win contests and, you know, testimonials and stuff like that. Everybody uses the same program, but everybody ends up looking different.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You know, so you're still unique. You're just using some structure to speed yourself up, because ultimately and we say this time and time again, you know, we're not trying to pitch you on anything. The fact of the matter is it's just time.
It's just speed, and it doesn't matter how old you are when you're starting. It just matters if you're going to get going or not.
Yeah, because like I say, like we talked about, it's a matter of, you know, we know building muscle is going to be slow, and so every month or two, you know, let's just say every month that you keep trying to do everything on your own, that's just it compounds. That's just 1 month of muscle building
lost
at a max potential. Yeah, lost. You know, so like I say, we don't, that's why we hardly ever try to really pitch. We're just like, look, man, I mean, that's just the fact of the matter. It's just reality that time works against you, and it's better just to find somebody that knows what they're doing to at least try for 30 days. And that's one of the things I think we probably need to talk about next time, just maybe habits and stuff like that, and actually giving something a good potential habit that you want to try. You know, you need a basically 30 days of consistency, and then at the end of the 30 days, look back and say, well, okay, is this something I want to include in my life and keep going with, or is this something that I just, it's not for me? Mm. Because, you know, the 24 hours isn't going to do it, neither is a week.
Yeah, so. You're not gonna get in shape in a week, and again, you're not gonna get out of shape in a week either. So
yeah, and you're not gonna see if you can stick, mm. which ultimately that's the thing that everybody glosses over. That's the one thing that everybody glosses over everywhere is stickability and compliance.
Oh yeah, you gotta if you're not following a program, you're not doing anything.
Yeah, it's a difference between effectiveness and efficiency, and everybody gets that confused.
Yeah, and it's the difference between working out and actually training. So
yeah, it's a difference between leading and managing. So mm-hmm. if you're and that's okay. You know, if you know how to lead in this industry, sure, you'd be able to put together your own workout that would be super effective. But you know, most people are more management types when it comes to things they're not experts in. So here's a program you can use. What you end up looking like depends on how well you manage the program. That's pretty much it. It's like owning your own little mini franchise.
yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, any good program, like, you know, if you've played a sport, your program's designed to peak you at a certain time and all that kind of stuff, and there's a difference between just being active and just moving around, even if you're moving around with weights in your hands, versus doing it in an actual structured plan. And that goes with all styles of training. Like if you're a distance runner or if you're a sprinter, I mean, there's only a certain – you can't just go running and expect to get better. There's a certain pattern to get you competitive.
Yeah.
And same with any kind of sport. You don't just go and play rat ball and think you're going to be a great basketball player. You actually need coaching. You actually need to work on certain skills. Like there's all of its sort of – designed. Your body's like kind of like a blank slate. You can make it do whatever you want, but you have to have some kind of pattern to push it through.
Well, yeah, no, that's anything though. I mean, literally anything that you do, there's kind of two parts of it.
Oh, it's like business, it's school, there's, business, anything.
Yeah, it's how well whatever system you're using, no matter if you're using it, you developed it yourself, or you're using someone else's, it's how well is this particular system itself designed. And so that could be business, like McDonald's. Obviously, they have business systems. It could be, Wendy's. It could be any of the franchises or whatever. It could be the system that you develop for your own business if you own it. It could be the way you live your life, how you wake up, and the routines that you go through. How well that you actually designed that. And then the second part is how well you actually work the system.
Yeah, how well do you follow it?
Right. Exactly. And it's just really funny that we say it time and time again that the people that get the best results are the ones that follow the system to the T.
Mm-hmm. Actually, that's cool that you brought up McDonald's. A buddy of mine, our accountant, has a McDonald's franchise. He has one of his clients, and he's like, without fail, every year that guy earns within just a couple grand. It's so predictable, the earnings. And then every time a new franchise opens, the earnings are almost bang on, right on the money, like exactly what they expect. So their system is like almost airtight. Like those things just don't go out of business, and those things are always profitable, and they always know what the profit is.
Yeah,
and that's because it's idiot proof. The system's just, it works perfectly.
Yeah, and that's the exact same thing that we're saying about our stuff is that, like I say, it's just funny. I know this sounds like pitch, and you know, you can think whatever you want to, but the fact of the matter is that it's just like that. I mean, we've got enough people using it. I mean, over 2 years now, we've done enough tweaks and stuff like that where you've got this thing iron tight. There's absolutely no reason for you to add anything to it unless you have to. Like a McDonald's guy, if he says, all right, all you got to do is follow this exactly, and you're going to make $1 million. This store is going to make $1 million this year. We've done all the demographics. We've done everything. We know that this is what's going to happen as long as you don't screw it up. I mean, why screw it up? Just be like, all right, sweet. I mean, it's, yeah. I'll put it this way, and we're kind of going off topic, but not really. But the fact that, do you know what Burger King's business philosophy is?
No, hit me.
Burger King, they put a store wherever there's a McDonald's. If you notice, there's always a Burger King near a McDonald's. Almost always. And so they let McDonald's do all the work, all the demographic work and everything like that, because they know that store is going to succeed, and so they just plop one right beside it.
Oh, that makes sense.
So, I mean, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, they found somebody that knows what they're doing, and they're saying, we're just not going to waste our resources on that to try to develop all this, all the demographic studies and really try to nail this down. We know they've got it down. We're just going to do what they're doing and go where they're going. And it worked.
Well, yeah.
So, like I say, kind of big, bold, conceptual stuff going on right now. Hopefully this is kind of squeezing its way into you guys' noggins. And
Should we talk about the contest?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I actually sent an email out about that, so everybody should have seen that. But we're going to have some different categories this time around.
It starts one on September 1st and ends the 24th of November.
Yeah, something like that. So right before Thanksgiving. So we definitely are trying to get this thing in before, you know, any of the holidays and stuff like that, so you can definitely enjoy yourself. Because I think last time – did we overgo it last time? And
I don't remember, but I know this one, we've designed it so it ends the day before Thanksgiving. So from – don't quote me right now, but I'm pretty sure it's the first to the – if it's not the first, it might be the second or something like that. But it's basically the first or second of September to the 24th of November. So it conveniently ends the day before Thanksgiving for anybody in the United States anyways. And then – we are going to add in new categories. We're going to add in some age categories. We haven't hammered them down exactly yet where we want to put the cutoffs, but we're going to add in some age categories just because it's kind of apparent that it's really tough for a younger guy to compete with an older guy as far as muscle mass and things like that. So it makes sense to reward guys based on their age just because it's, you know, for a guy who's 20 or 21 versus a guy who's 35 or 40 who's been training for 15 years, it's the 21-year-old is just not going to be able to build the muscle mass that the older guy can build or already has. So both are great accomplishments, getting in shape at both ages, but it's maybe almost after looking at our previous contest winners, it's kind of hard to really compare a 21-year-old guy to a 31 or 41-year-old guy, that sort of thing. So we're going to be putting in age categories, like Brad said, to allow more chances for people to win in competing against people like themselves.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And the other thing I think that we're going to do, that we'll probably take the actual categories that we were using, like build and burn, we're probably going to condense those into two. So it's roughly going to be, do you need to lose a significant amount of fat? If so, then you'll fall into one category. If your primary goal obviously is I have to build some muscle in my frame, then you're probably going to go, or you'll go in the other category. So inherently the build category will stay the same, and what it'll look like is probably the build and burn will
be combined
for, yeah, but it'll probably be on an age basis as well. So the way it looks is we'll probably have more categories and more chance for people to win. So, instead of just having the three categories and then the overall winners, which means that you could potentially have five winners, it might end up being that we'll have maybe six or seven. So, not sure yet, but.
There's going to be build and burn. So, and like there's going to be people, exactly, the two primary goals, and then those two primary goals will be split via age. So, right. Yeah.
So, we'll probably have for lack of a better term, a senior's build, a senior's burn, and then a junior's build, a junior's burn, and then a first, second, third, fourth, you know, first, second, third overall as well. So, and just remember, just because you don't technically win your category, you can still come in second place or third place overall. So that happens all the time. Actually, every time we run one of these things, it seems like one of the people that, you know, comes in second or third actually doesn't win their category, So we'll have like we usually have like two people from Build and Burn, you know, in the top three,
mm-hmm.
just because that's just the way it's worked out.
Yeah. So we're close. We'll have it hammered out by next week before the contest. And then anyone who's asked, for anybody who's not aware, entering, and we'll have a website for this too, but entering the contest just means the day of the beginning of the contest or anywhere around the first couple of days. You just take your front, side, and back picture. So you're just standing there, shirt off front, and then a side shot, and then a back shot with the current newspaper visible. And I like it when guys do a close up too of the date and the cover of the paper, so it can be cross referenced.
Yeah, no, and no Speedo thongs this time, guys.
Yeah, please. And then just taking those pictures and then taking your measurements, your waist, your shoulder, your height, and your weight. That's all you need to do to start. And you don't officially actually enter the contest till the day you send those pictures in at the end with your afters. So it's kind of up to you to decide if you're in. And then, you know, we have coaching calls the whole way through. We'll be helping you out the whole way through, and everyone in the forums will be too. And then at the end, when you submit, and you don't need to send us those pictures. At the very end, when you've got your after pictures taken, which we'll coach you on how to take those, then you send all of them together, the befores and your measurements and your after pictures and those measurements, and a little short essay. It's like 200 words. And then that's your entrance at the end. So at any moment you can, this is all up to you. I mean,
right.
It's not like you get penalized or something. It's like entering is a mental thing. You've just decided you're going to do this, and you take your pictures, and 12 weeks later you see what you look like and take your pictures.
Right. Here's one thing just to remember really quick, because I know we're going to get this question. Yes, 3.0 is coming out next month after the contest starts. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because people are like, well, you know, should I use 3.0? All right, the fact of the matter is that the workouts in general are going to be the same. The way we arrange them is going to change. So you're not going to lose anything by starting with what you have. Okay? You know, because we're kind of changing a little bit up just based on how our philosophy's changed and stuff like that. So in other words, using what you have is not going to hurt your chances.
Right. Well, I am producing the foundation workout.
Sure.
And I can have that ready before the contest if anyone wants to use that. Now that's slightly different than what you've seen in the program. So and everyone will have access to it. So it'll be your choice whether or not you want to use that or the base workout that Brad was just talking about. And I guess we'll do a coaching call explaining right. the way you can choose. Like, for instance, the last contest Rich came in second, and he did the advanced workouts, the ATS workouts.
Right.
So that you already have choices. So there's already all kinds of choices. So it's, I guess what I'll do is my little assessment of where I think each workout would fit based on your training experience. Rich was a pretty advanced guy. He's been training for a long time. It made sense that, and he'd already been through the base. It made sense that he was using the advanced, whereas maybe a younger guy might want to use the new base ones that I'm building. So it's, each person may fit into a different category.
Yeah, I guess what we'll do is we will, before we actually roll out 3.0 next month, we will give you the actual layout of the workouts. Mm-hmm. And so you can put it together yourself based on what you have. We'll go ahead and do that ahead of time, so ahead of the contest. That way, if you want to use the actual 3.0 layout, then you'll have like a mind map showing you how it looks.
Yep.
Right. So because the actual workouts are the same, again, just the way they're arranged is going to be a little bit differently. And actually, you know, John's adding the kind of fundamental. This is the power win, right? Is it power?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So the kind of power base in there. Some of the big stuff that's coming. Obviously, the self-psych warfare is a big module that I'm actually putting together, and it's. That's kind of the biggest update to 3.0, I think, just because that's going to solve a lot of the problems that people are having as far as just like a lot of the similar stuff that we went over in the podcast, some of the stuff we went over in the emails. Those are the things that help. They're going to help you get into compliance really quickly and really just kind of shed a lot of the the things that are holding you back as far as the what if mentality that's kind of going on that everybody has. You know, what if I'm wrong? What if this? What if that? And it's really going to get you more into action mode, because that's what determines the people that get the results and don't. It's not the actual program itself. It's the actual getting in and doing it and not having people get you off track, and, you know, in your social environment or whatever, even if they're not trying to. You know, everyone has influence over you, whether you believe it or not, somehow, some way. And so the big key of all this is, while you're trying to undergo this transformation, to really push all of this stuff aside actively. And, you know, we're going to give you the techniques and tactics to be able to do that. So,
mm-hmm.
And the understanding.
Yeah. Sure. And I'll be adding in some more exercise physiology stuff, some biomechanics stuff, and just through what questions we've been getting throughout the year, like things that are coming up that people aren't understanding or want more information on, that'll get added into. So it just gets a little more robust each year.
Yeah, we add, we take away, we add, we take away. It's like we build it up. It's kind of funny. It's kind of like you know.
Well, it's just sharpening the blade.
Yeah, we add stuff and then we discard what's not working, and then we add stuff and discard what's not working, and, you know, you guys' feedback is what helps that happen. I mean, we're not trying to take all the claim here or all the credit, because, you know, a lot of these changes and things definitely do not happen unless you guys give us feedback on what's working and what's not, and what's confusing and what's really just, you know, kind of like the cardio thing. I mean, we totally scrapped that. Just, I mean, that was easy. that took less than a month of feedback. We were like, oh yeah, screw this. That's out. Mm. So, all right. Well, anything else you want to close in on? I think we got a lot covered.
No, man, we went all over the place there. I think we're good.
Oh, cool. So, you know, anybody that was mad at last week's, you know, we actually went crazy on this one. So, you know, cheers. So, all right, man. Well, for John Barbin, I am Brad Howard, and that is your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.